and welcome to Room Escape Divas, where we talk about everything escape rooms. Today, we have an owner from Kingston of Improbable Escapes, and it's Melissa Epen.
Locked together in a room, solving puzzles in the gloom of a dark and haunted tomb of a psycho killer clown who for an hour went to town and trapped us behind this rock, kept in place with a simple nasty lock. With a key from a magnet maze, we found a secret hiding place behind the roll-away bookcase. Through a tunnel we did crawl to find some dope on the wall. Learn a crossword made of chalk, and I think I found some bread here on this block. This killer, he seems so polite, leaving clues to aid our flight, and a handy UV light to illuminate the code to escape from his abode. It's like he doesn't wanna slay clever people, so he lets them get away.
Awesome, thanks guys.
Thank you. I'm glad you could join us today. Now, we have you on for a number of reasons. One, you do a lot of pop-ups with your company. And two, you also help put on workshops and help run the Unconference, which happened about a month ago. It will be by the time this gets out. The Unconference, the 2017 Escape Room Unconference. So before we get all into that, why don't you give an introduction of yourself?
Okay, so my name is Melissa Epen. I am one of the founders and owners of Improbable Escapes. We are a company located in Kingston, Ontario, and we do a lot of awesome pop-up games. So we partner up with Parks Canada and some other organizations to run games in National Historic Sites across Ontario.
That's pretty cool. And so how long are these pop-ups? How long are they in length? And then how long do they go throughout the month or the week or whatever?
So the actual game time ranges, it can be anywhere from about an hour on to about 2 hours. We run them from about 1 month to 3 months at a time. And it just depends on the site and the agreement that we have with the site.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
So as an owner, I mean, not every owner has the experience of running pop-ups. What would you say are the big differences between running pop-ups versus a static room?
Pop-ups are awesome. I'm obviously biased, but I think pop-ups are fantastic. There's so much more abilities to be able to run fully immersive games, I find. So, for example, we did a game at Murnee Tower last year, and we were literally in a tower, and it was actor facilitated, and it was so much fun. And because it's mutually beneficial that we're in a historic site, we have Parks Canada and different organizations backing us up as well.
How long does it take you to run or to create a pop-up?
It ranges probably between 3 to 6 months, depending on the project.
Sounds like a good time.
Yeah.
So what are the challenges do you find with a pop-up room as opposed to an escape room?
Mostly that we can't adhere anything to walls. So when it comes down to the actual puzzle design and stuff like that, we have to be very cognizant of the fact that it's in a historic site. So we can't just
rip everything. Oh, let's tear this down.
This is why Errol doesn't design for historic sites.
Can I go into this graveyard and start digging?
You would ask that.
Yeah, I may have asked that. Well, not real digging. I wanted a crypt. And I was like, does it have a crypt? Can we build one? Oh, I guess we should do a fake grave.
But then we figured that players might start just digging through graves if they get frustrated. Yeah, so,
anyway, sorry.
Sorry.
No, it's all good.
But yes, I can understand you don't want to destroy what's there, and you want to keep everything intact.
Yeah, exactly.
So, are they mostly kind of like paper puzzles, or do you do a lot of interaction with people, or how does that work?
So it's a lot of interaction with people. So our game hosts are all in character facilitating the experience. It's basically physical puzzles, I suppose, similar to what you would find in a traditional brick and mortar escape room game. We don't really use paper puzzles often. We just try to build the game around the set that we have. So for example, at Bellevue House, it's a beautiful, beautiful house that has a lot of different stories and levels to it. So the puzzles in that game are based around what's already there.
That's cool. How often do you run a pop-up? I mean, how many do you have throughout the year or month, if that's too many?
We will have a lot going on this year. So right now we're only running one pop-up game at Bellevue House. But during the Christmas season, we had that as well as a pop-up game at Fort Henry during Lumina Borealis. This summer, we're going to have quite a few pop-up games. So we'll have Bellevue House, Murnie Tower, probably Fort Henry. We're going to be at Fort Wellington in Prescott, Upper Canada Village in Morrisburg, and probably a few others as well.
When are those, by the way?
So they'll probably start ranging between May till about September or so.
Do you have a lot of escape pop-ups in plan because of the 150th? Canada is celebrating its 150th anniversary this year, so I wonder if you have more because of that.
Yeah, for sure. It was actually perfect timing for us because we're able to expand to help create new things in old places so we can attract a new demographic into really awesome historic sites.
This isn't a question, just a note, but now I'm really excited because I have a cottage in Prescott. So, and we always went to Upper Canada Village every year. So now I have a double reason to take a vacation there this summer.
Yes, that's awesome.
Yeah, Kingston's actually a really great location for a lot of these historic sites. I was there for 4 years for university, so just thinking about it, I'm like, wow, that'd be the perfect place to have pop-ups.
Yeah, it's actually unbelievably perfect. There's so much history here, and all of our games, except one of them at our brick and mortar location, is based on Kingston history, which is pretty cool. So we draw upon history quite a bit.
Wow, and how large is Upper Canada? Do you like get a whole village to play with?
We're still figuring out the logistics, but we'll see what we come up with. I think it's going to be a really awesome game.
That sounds fun. It fell through, but we almost had the chance to play with a Pioneer Village for us. And just the thought of having 40 acres and all these little industries to create an immersive, expansive, epic escape room would have been glorious, whether it be, you know, it's like, oh, do I get a bakery?
Yeah, you should have heard the questions like, how about a tinsmith? What about, you know, like, can we change the walls in these houses?
Yeah. Oh, do you have a pottery? Yeah. Oh, I want to be able to break pots.
Yeah, I want a kiln.
I had all sorts of fun ideas, but sadly it fell through. So yeah. Just the chance to work in a village populated with all these people sounds really...
Yeah, it's going to be awesome.
Yeah, you probably can't say, and so we probably can't really ask you too much, but it'd be really fun to hear. Or maybe you can tell us afterwards, or, you know...
This is where Errol says, let's go and do them in the summer!
Yeah. You should!
Cottage! Yeah!
Come visit!
So, how... on average, like, what are the size of the groups that would go through your pop-ups?
Now they're 2 to about 8 people or so. We did kind of play around with bigger teamed experiences, but we like keeping the groups smaller. So, for example, at Bellevue House, it's between 2 and 6 people, but games start every 15 minutes.
Every 15 minutes? And how long does it go for again?
An hour.
Oh, wow. Well, that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Checkpoint.
Do they go into different rooms, or do they sometimes pass each other?
So basically, they are traveling throughout the house at the same time, but just in different places. So they don't typically run into each other. We have actors there to facilitate the flow of people as well. So people ideally shouldn't ever see each other.
Nice.
Yeah, that sounds a lot like Hogtown.
Yeah. But Hogtown, you do see other people.
Yeah, I saw you a couple times.
Yeah, I saw you dancing with the pig.
Oh yeah, that was a fun time.
That was
for those
weird.
Who don't know, I think we mentioned it in a previous podcast, but yeah. Hogtown is an immersive theater experience here in Toronto that it's run two summers now, I think. Yeah. But yeah, so you basically get free run of a house to go and see, you know, different stories that are happening within it. But yeah, so Errol went off and did something. It looked like he was in a Lynch film.
So how did you start getting into doing pop-ups with your escape room facility? Or did you start off with pop-ups?
So we created our first facility in Kingston in June of 2015, I believe. And we knew that Fort Fright was happening at Fort Henry. It happens every October. It's their haunt. And we really wanted to become involved with it. So we basically just kind of reached out, said we have a cool experience that we could bring to the fort. They came and saw what we did. They liked it. So they invited us to have a room at Fort Fright to be able to put on a scary escape room. So we did that and it was awesome. It was actor facilitated, but we didn't tell anyone there was going to be an actor in there. So he basically just scared everyone quite a bit. It was great. And after that, we had a lot of different Parks Canada sites reach out to us asking if we would do similar things in their facility.
Oh, wow.
Nice. Oh, nice.
Yeah. So it was perfect. It was awesome.
So how many people are part of Improbable Escapes? When we met you for the first time at the Unconference, it was cool because we kept meeting more and more people from your company.
Yeah, we have about 16 people.
Whoa.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we have a pretty great, well-rounded team. So we have some game developers. We have an electrician who's able to create our tech props. We have a marketing team, a historic team, our game hosts, and a set designer.
That's awesome.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's insane. That's a lot of people. And I guess you started off with just three of you or two of you?
Yeah, it was just myself and my business partner, Emma. It was the two of us that just started it. Didn't know if it was going to be successful or not, or if escape rooms would really take off at that time. And it was awesome. We were able to slowly start bringing on more staff. And then in 2016, in June, we expanded to a space that was five times the size of our first. And we needed a lot more staff to be able to do that.
Wow. So in Kingston, what is the escape community like? Do you see a lot of loyal followers, or do you see new people every single time? How does that work?
It's kind of a mix. We do have a lot of really, really, really loyal customers, which is awesome. We introduced a program too called the Improbable Escapes League. So for our loyal customers, they get a box and it has a shirt that says the Improbable Escapes League in it and a discount card and stuff like that. So I think that helps foster more loyal customers. But it's still educating the market, because Kingston has a really high rotating population with military and students, but we still haven't quite hit the student demographic like we've wanted to.
Yeah, I remember talking to a few students that are in the Slack, and they always, their biggest concern is money.
Yeah.
We were hoping to market to some students, but we also realized that students don't have money. And this was one of our live events, and so we didn't actually see too many students, no. Even though we were right beside a college.
University.
University, yeah. We were right beside a university, for that matter. And no students came. They did not like us.
Oh, yeah. I get the money thing. It's hard, though, because we have a city that's so full of really awesome students. We want them all, obviously, to come and play awesome escape rooms.
Because, yeah, I think interest-wise, they'd definitely be there. But, yeah, money-wise, it's harder to justify it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we actually started doing a discount day as well. So on Tuesdays, it's only $12.50 to play a game at Improbable Escapes.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's just like a movie.
Yeah.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah, so we do get a lot more customers that are students now on those days. And we're doing student discounts and stuff like that, trying to help more students come out.
Cool. So going back to the Unconference that just ran, how did you get involved with that? And you could also talk about it a bit more too.
Awesome. So I was basically talking to Jake and Christine and Scott about it. We had gone to the first UN conference. It was, I think, at the end of 2015, I believe, that Scott put on in Toronto, and it was awesome. Got to meet a lot of really cool people there. I think a lot of people were hoping to do another event like that. For a while, we were doing owner meetups in Ontario every month, but it was just after a while, especially getting into the holiday season, it was hard to maintain. Everyone was just getting really busy with their own businesses and stuff like that. So it kind of was perfect timing to talk about having a conference, especially because Scott has the knowledge and the awesome skill set to be able to run such an awesome event. So, Christine and Jake and Scott worked super hard to be able to put on this event. I helped out not quite as much as they did. I did more of their social media stuff and trying just to get the word out, but the three of them put so much work in and it really showed at the event.
So for anyone that doesn't know, Scott Nicholson is the professor who works at Laurier Brantford campus. Jake works at Escape Maze, and Christine is the owner. Actually, Jake owns Escape Maze, is one of the partners of that, and Christine is the owner of Looking Glass Adventures. Escape Maze is in Peterborough, and Looking Glass Adventures is here in Toronto.
Stanforth.
Yeah, and Scott and Christine have been guests on the podcast, too.
Yes. You guys should have heard them. It was all exciting. So did you find any challenges in finding people for the UN conference or coming up with ideas? Why did you want to have... Because we did something different this year. You had workshops as opposed to... So like actual scheduled workshops as opposed to the UN conference, which is usually more organic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think the premise of having workshops just kind of came around for multiple reasons. Organizations like Transworld, for example, they have seminars that, from what I've seen, they've done a really good job in terms of getting really great speakers out to teach the escape room industry or owners or enthusiasts different aspects of escape rooms. So I think this year, especially at owners meetups, we were often talking about technology. A lot of owners don't have much knowledge or a skill set based on how to put tech into their games. So there's definitely a desire to have a tech workshop. And then obviously we had both you, Errol and Amanda, come in to do an awesome workshop as well that a lot of people were able to learn so much about. I think the biggest takeaway from the UN conference was the UN conference itself. From most of the feedback that I got, a lot of people were just really happy to be able to talk to each other and talk through some problems they were facing and stuff like that.
Didn't you guys do like seminars, my pants, Errol?
We did.
Yup. Tell us about it.
Yeah, just tell everybody else about them.
You can start, man pants. Because you started the whole workshop thing.
Yeah.
And I sadly could not go to yours because you were way too popular.
No.
We had expecting trolling.
She was super popular.
People were clawing at her. Let me clarify that. We both had the same number of attendees. I just had the smaller room. So I went first that day. It went really well, actually.
People clawed at her.
No, people did not claw at me.
What did you talk about?
Back to the topic.
My seminar was about storytelling in escape rooms, and it was interesting to research for because there hasn't been a ton written about it yet. So I read a lot of books about video game design. I have a lot of experience just about storytelling in general, but applying it to escape rooms. It was a really interesting research process. And it was good, actually. I talked for about an hour and a half or an hour and 20 minutes about just kind of giving people an overview of storytelling and applying and the different applications to escape rooms. Then we did a little bit of a workshop portion where we actually made an escape room. I took a common escape room theme, so we ended up on prison.
Yeah.
And we were like, how can we flesh this out? So it was good because it just got people thinking about the sheer number of questions you can ask when designing your escape room and how that affects it. Like,
so what were the kind of questions that came up in your workshop?
They were interesting. They were varied. The one thing that people tended to like most people just listened, to be honest. You know, but sometimes people would raise their hands to ask specific questions about their rooms. And it wasn't so much about, you know, because I would talk about hint systems and how they should be well integrated into a room. And so you'd get a couple questions of people panicking because they have these TV screens for hint systems. And I'm right. like, no, it's not that, you know, you should like scrap everything you've built so far, but it's something to consider maybe when you're like, doing rooms in the future. And
I'm just picturing some owners sitting there looking totally dejected. It's like, no, I'm not saying everything's bad.
But it was interesting though, especially when I, like, the thing that we ended up talking the most about that came from an audience question was about using all five senses in a room. Oh. Or like having all five senses
like
available.
Touch?
Yes, like touch. Shut up, Errol. I don't like saying the word. Anyway.
He didn't get to troll you in the room. No. In the seminar.
No, he didn't. And so I did see him, though, like taking an Instagram photo off to the side through the door at one point. But it was somebody asked about, because I mentioned smell.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly that just sparked a whole debate about what smells you can use in a room. It was incense in particular that somebody was asking about.
Really?
And yeah, so someone was like, well, I want incense, but my business partner here thinks it's a bad idea. And so, and that just like started, because then it was a good discussion because it got people discussing like, well, yes, immersion, but we also have to think about player allergies. Comfort levels, right? Allergies. And incense. I'm like, well, incense is a really strong smell, right? Yeah. I know I don't like incense, like when I walk into those stores and I'm just like, but it was really good and it got people thinking. And you know, I think there were three types of people in my panel, which was like, there were the ones who were like, wow, that's really cool, I never thought about that. There were ones who were like, brought their business partners with them to try and convince them that this was the way to go. Mm-hmm. And then there were ones who were already on that route who wanted to validate what they were doing.
Right.
And
oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it was really good. Really good.
So I guess you have like owners still following up with you occasionally?
I only got the one question afterwards, okay. But it was good though. Like, you know, not everybody... I think there was one owner who was sort of like, I didn't realize that the situation was this dire in Ontario. And I did give that bias to begin with. I'm like, I'm basing my experiences on what I've seen.
Right.
I've done a little bit of research, but obviously if I haven't done rooms around the world, I can't speak to them all. But, you know, like... Some people thought, you know, a couple people in the seminar thought, well, it's just an obvious thing. You should pay attention to story. So the fact that I was a little bit nervous because I went back to basics on mine. I went back to like, well, this is the three-act structure kind of thing.
Right.
And I didn't know whether that was the route to go. But I think it was good that I did because at least, I can't assume that everybody knows or remembers the details of that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Actually, I found it funny because, I mean, I got to see your presentations before the unconference, and you both actually had the same curve. And like in Errol's, he called it like the Star Wars curve. So
I use Star Wars as an example. Like Errol's like, this is the Star Wars curve, and I'm like, crap, that's my example.
Was anybody like, what's Star Wars?
No. Yeah. But I did have one guy who came up to me afterwards. He didn't interrupt my presentation, but I was afraid. I'm like, I'm using Star Wars because it's really common and most people know it, but I had a guy who was really nerdy about Star Wars and was correcting me on a couple of my details, and I was like, oh no!
It went the other way. So, Errol, what'd you cover in yours?
I just had the graph. I actually didn't talk about it much because I knew that Manpans was talking about it, but I really wanted to show that interest curve, and I wanted to show how you should have high and low so that you don't keep people at an intensity the whole time, because that gets really tiring. And most entertainment industries know that. It's not like that's why it wasn't such a big deal that you had a two-man pans, because it's a common thing within the entertainment world. So, and basically, it's most of the stuff that I have to say, same things that Manpan said. Except for the story part. I talked about puzzles.
Yeah, you were puzzle design. I talked about
puzzles, and really I just talked at them for 2 hours.
And your thing was long, like 65 slides.
It was. I had like 65 slides. I don't know how many you had, Man Pants.
I had clue. I had like 40-something slides.
Oh, wow. So you had lots, too.
I had quite a few slides.
I had 60, and then Man Pants was there. I just talked at them for 2 hours straight.
Oh, it was great. Like...
And let's not forget you trolled Ruby, saying that she's a bathroom inspector.
Yeah. Like, oh, but it was sad because like, Ruby brought up a really good point. When we were practicing our slides, Ruby brought up, like, you know, actually, you know, I've been taught that you can judge a place by how nice its bathrooms are. Right, and
how
so
clean, how nice, how it
sorry,
have to be nice.
How clean the bathrooms are. So when you go to an escape room and there's a super sketchy bathroom, that might be a sign of the room to come. Right,
because if you don't care about the sanitation of a place that everybody goes to and you might use yourself, then that's an indication that you might not care.
So then Errol took that in his presentation, said like, I like puzzles. Amanda likes story. Ruby likes bathroom. She's our bathroom inspector. Like he just.
No, actually, I spent more time on. I don't think it was that I said that, wasn't it? When I was talking about how people will look at the whole experience, but I'm not going to get into the whole experience, like the customer service nor the bathroom cleanliness.
Okay, that
but
might have
Ruby
been it.
Will look at your
you
bathroom
also trolled the audience
and quietly
too, so.
Judge you.
Yeah, yeah.
Actually, not it. Quietly judge you. She yeah. will yeah. outwardly judge you. But it's very important, as we said before. You want to have the whole place clean as well. Anyway, but yes, how did I troll the audience?
Oh, how did you troll the audience? That was the
thing is, I actually don't remember much because whenever I do a presentation, whenever I do a performance, whenever I do these things, I go into flow state.
Yep.
No, well, yeah, well, I go into a flow state and I just let it go. And afterwards, I don't know what happened.
Well, there's a live Twitter to prove what you said. So, like, it's not just me being like, Errol said this and exaggerating. No, he actually said, this is when you said, like, you know, Amanda likes story. I like puzzles. Other people like other stupid, silly things or something.
Yeah, I was following from Toronto, and it was Erica, and I'm going to butcher her last name here, Nordermere, and she was live tweeting both of you.
Yeah.
And all the, pretty much the key points from your presentation. She did a really good job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, she did a great job. It was good, because we met her once before. She,
right, you right. Remember,
at the first UnConference.
There
were a lot of people I didn't meet at the last UnConference, and so I got a chance to meet them at this one, so that was exciting, too.
The other difficulty Errol had was that he had a huge lunch. Like,
oh, that was horrible! Oh, no, so we went to this place called the Admiral's, and so I thought, hey, I'll just have the burger and fries. And it's not just, it was insanely disgusting, actually.
I saw the picture of
it. I enjoyed it because it was yummy and I was hungry, but I ate way too much grease. And it was
and
there.
And I think everybody else did as well. They ate there.
I don't know, but it would just sat there and just was just threatening to come out from all the places.
Okay, I didn't need that detail.
It was horrible. My stomach
And so, like, about halfway through, he's like, how's everybody doing? Gosh, are you tired from all the eating?
Yeah, I was in non-filter mode. I just ate way too much. It was horrible.
No, but it was good.
I'll go back to the Admiral's and eat again.
Oh, of course you will.
But hopefully I won't have a presentation right after it.
Yeah. I think people got something out of it, though. Yours was good. You managed to pack it into 2 hours. That was impressive.
I talked them.
Yeah.
And I ranted at them a little bit. Yeah, it was just my personal rant. 2 hours.
Yeah.
What was
the person who came up to you afterwards who said, I wanted you to... Should I not mention that?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
The person who came up after us is like, I was thinking you could like beta test my puzzles.
Oh!
But.
No, he asked a question. Okay. I have a question. I was thinking that you could beta test my puzzles, but after today, maybe not. I'd be very strict, though. I mean, I can get pretty hardcore about beta testing puzzles.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you're still fair. I mean, you're not just going to, well, You're not just going to rant at them for the sake of ranting. I mean, you break it down and you give them constructive advice as well. So
I will analyze it into its different parts on why it might or might not work.
Yes.
Yes. It's all sorts of fun.
Yeah.
So where can, like, I know you guys are sharing the slides. Where can people find the slides now?
Thecodex.ca? I don't know. Okay. Yeah, thecodex.ca. We have a MailChimp list that you can subscribe to. We won't be spamming you with anything. It's just a way to... Actually, Errol should say this one because he's more expert in this.
Yeah, it's on thecodex.ca. There's an article there. You can see our slides. I have it behind a MailChimp newsletter thing. And we keep getting daily updates about who subscribed, but yeah. You know, it goes to completely different email, so we never check it. I was planning on having that there so that if we ever decide to put it out in a larger format so that we can explain what those points are, we would tell people.
That's true. I did get one email from somebody who who asked, like, who challenged me on a point, but it was more that the slides only give the bullet points. They don't give the full elaboration that, you know, we had in our presentations.
Yes. So, but that would be the only reason why I would use that mailing list. If we use it, we probably will put it out and then probably not tell anybody. I don't know. Hopefully we'll tell somebody if we ever do.
So, getting back to Melissa here.
What happened during the unconference part? So, as you said, Manpans and I were only able to go to one day. That was the workshop day, and we missed out on the unconference. And we went to it last year as well, and we enjoyed ourselves. So, could you give maybe a brief rundown on what happened at the unconference?
Yeah, for sure. So those that aren't familiar with unconferences, basically the way that Scott specifically structures them is that everyone has an opportunity to grab a sticky note and write down a topic that they would like to talk about or get help with or anything like that. And then he took all of these sticky notes and compiled them into different topics, into different groups, and put them onto a schedule. So for the schedule, say, for example, maybe the first hour time slot, you could pick from four or five different topics and you would go and you would sit there for about an hour and you would just talk about it. So there was topics ranging from marketing to the future of escape rooms to family friendly escape rooms, and just sitting into all of these talks, you could hear owners talk about maybe they were considering something, maybe they had expertise on something. Which was really cool about this year specifically was that there was a wider variety of skill set compared to the one that was at the end of 2015. There was a bunch of owners that already had experience doing stuff, so they could give more advice and more help to maybe newer escape rooms that were starting out.
Which ones did you go to?
I went to a marketing unconference seminar. I don't even think they're called seminars. I don't know what they're even called. Topics, maybe? I went to a marketing topic. That one was really good. I went to the future of escape rooms. That one was interesting. We were basically talking about what people foresee in their markets to be happening in 2017. I think those were the main two that I went to. A lot of the times I was hopping around from topic to topic.
Nice. And so did you, and you, there weren't any pop-up topics that you could talk about and lend your expertise?
We did. I think there was actually a topic on pop-ups. Emma, my business partner, was at that one. She was trying to get some information on how we can design Murnee Tower for this year. So there was some good conversations there as well.
Nice. Wow. So getting back to you there, Melissa, how did you get started?
So,
hold on for a second.
Yeah.
I'm just waiting for, there was noise on your end, I think.
Oh, I can't even hear you. Oh, I'm hiding in a closet at Improbable Escapes right now. So basically I couldn't find a quiet place and I broke my laptop. So I've had to carry my iMac everywhere lately. And I found an empty room and I was trying to plug in my MacBook or my Mac and it wouldn't plug in. So I'm sitting in a storage closet.
Thank you, then, for your dedication. And I interrupted you, but I just heard this huge noise in the background.
I didn't hear it because I had headphones on, but yeah.
Oh, yeah. So we were talking about how you got started.
Yeah. So myself and Emma, we actually worked at an escape room in Ontario for a while. We both left there and pursued different careers, but the excitement of escape rooms just pulled us back in. So a few months after leaving, working in escape rooms, we decided to start taking day trips up to different cities, and we came across Kingston, and all we really knew about Kingston was that Queens, RMC, and SLC was here, but we didn't know anything else. So it was a beautiful, beautiful summer day, and everyone was super nice and so supportive and so talkative, and it was awesome. And we basically fell in love with the city. So we thought, like, we might as well do it. We might as well try to open up an escape room. So we dropped everything and moved to Kingston.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
That's yeah, that's brave. Impressive. That is very brave.
Just, yeah, it was worth it.
Wow. And there weren't any escape rooms at the time there. Are you guys the first?
We were the first. Yeah. We were the first, and we're the only until about maybe 6 months ago.
Oh, okay. I can't remember. I've done many of them now. I'm just trying to figure out. No, we haven't. I haven't done. You have you done Kingston?
I've been to Improbable Ones.
Yeah, there you go. Okay. I still need to go.
Shame.
No.
But they got like a ton of pop-ups in the summer. Of course you're going.
Oh, I'd like to. Yes. I'll I would.
Man Pens is already out the door.
Yeah.
It's like, with or without you guys. Yeah.
You guys already went one on Friday without me.
It wasn't a good one, don't worry.
I know, I saw where you guys went. So
if you would like to guess which one we went to, please email us. So if you don't mind my asking, what is your background normally like before you got into escape rooms?
It's a weird mix. So I did my undergrad at Waterloo in psychology and computer science, and then I moved on to Conestoga College for pre-service firefighting.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so that's my educational background, but it's actually perfect for escape rooms because you have psychology that comes into play with customer experiences and stuff like that, and then CS is good for multiple things, and pre-service firefighting is awesome at understanding fire code and building
Yes, and making it safe.
Exactly. And, so it was actually the perfect mix, and then Emma's background is biochem. So she was able to create a lot of cool puzzles for us and still does.
Cool.
Nice.
Yeah.
So Emma is the puzzle designer and you are kind of like the producer, I would assume, and you run everything, or have I mixed up your roles? Or do you all just get involved in a smattering of things?
It's a mixture of all of that. So I'm the director of business development for Improbable Escapes, and we have some other companies as well. So for those companies. And then Emma is the director of game experience and design. So she leads our game developers. But at the end of the day, it's kind of a big team collaboration when it comes to our games. Everyone's helping out. Everyone is doing things from building the game itself to helping with themes or puzzles and stuff like that.
Well, so how many rooms do you get a chance to put out? I take it you probably rotate them on a yearly or twice a year or three. I mean, you've only been around now for, is it 2 years or how long?
Yeah, 2 years. It's about two years. Yeah. So at our brick and mortar location, we rotate about every year or so, but at our current brick and mortar location, we have enough space to put in three new games. So we're probably going to put in three new games before we actually rotate anything out. And then for our pop-up games, we have pop-up games coming up every 3 months.
That's awesome. Wow.
Good grief. So you must be super busy.
Yeah, we like keeping busy.
And then you did the unconference on top of all of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's awesome and it's worth it.
So do you also do a lot of corporate events as well, or do you stick mostly with the pop-ups and your own rooms?
We do a lot of corporate events as well. We're getting into hopefully a good partnership with a leadership academy here in town so that they can do some corporate training alongside our escape rooms as well.
So going back to the unconference, like, so you were more on the social media side of things. What was it like marketing for that? Did you have a lot of, you know, did you find it challenging to get people's attention to it, or was it, you know, did it pretty much run itself?
I think it just honestly completely ran itself. I at first was thinking about doing a lot of social media posts ahead of time, but a lot of the owners, for example, from those monthly meetups that we were having had all signed up for it anyhow. And it was a good number already. So it was just a few posts here and there. But I think it was mostly just reaching out personally. I think all four of us, to my understanding, probably reached out personally to a bunch of owners and stuff like that to try to get people to come out to Brantford for the unconference.
And speaking about marketing, you said you went to a seminar or workshop on that as well. Did you learn anything? I know marketing is always a challenge when it comes to escape rooms, not so much that people wouldn't want to do it, but there are so many of them, people might be confused about it.
Yeah, because a big part of it's education.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually did learn quite a bit. So Benito, who runs an escape room in Durham, he was talking about Google AdWords quite a bit. That wasn't something that we had pursued beforehand. But it's definitely something we're going to be pursuing now. There was a lot to learn. It's even hard to specifically think of everything just because it was so much information within a day that I was kind of like grasping on to different pieces of information that were relevant and holding on to it.
Yes, marketing's hard. I'm glad I don't have to think about it anymore.
You will eventually.
Why would I need to think about marketing? Oh, no. Then you have to worry about things like Google Ads and SEO and then trying to make sure you rank. Oh, it's just horrible. I'm at my work. I'm partnered with the marketing team because I'm on the education team, but I'm so glad I don't have to look at the metrics.
I'm just imagining you in a marketing meeting now. Like, I don't know, guys. Just tell people about it, I guess.
Oh, no, I don't give my opinion about marketing stuff because there's so much about it that I'm just quite happy I don't have to get involved in regards to it. Because there's tons of things.
I had a friend tell me the other day that, sorry, this is, we'll get back to Melissa, but I had a friend tell me the other day that, she posted a job posting at a game company and it was a marketing job. And I said, nope, like immediately. And then she's, no, it's great if it's a job that you, for an industry that you love. I'm like, not me. I don't want to do marketing in anything.
I think marketing in escape rooms is really hard because I've talked to a lot of owners and the target market for each of the locale really differs. Like, for example, there's this one, they're a single escape room town and literally within, I guess, a 50-kilometer radius, there's not really any other escape rooms. And their main demographic is actually people over the age of 40 and up.
Oh.
And other places where they're more crowded, they may cater to kids or they may cater to young adults. In the case of Melissa, I imagine maybe more students because of the student population.
And military people.
Yeah, it's a good mix in Kingston, but it's so diverse that it's almost hard to knock out a good marketing plan because you have your students, you have military. And that those demographics are so different and the ability to reach both of them is so different. So right now it's kind of, we're coming down to the time where we have to create very specific marketing plans for all the different demographics in Kingston to try to educate everyone still on what escape rooms are.
And Manpans, I know you're saying you didn't want to do marketing, but a lot of it is just data. So you being a bookkeeper and you love numbers, that's what you do. A lot of it's just, it's just data analysis.
Patterns, but I
yeah, but that, there you go. See? No, it's the same thing.
But then I have to actually like reach out to people and that's the stuff.
No, actually, you don't have to do that. You would have to analyze and come up with marketing plans and strategies. And that's
come up with plans. That sounds awful. Sounds awful for me.
No, but that's not the reaching out to people part, which you said you didn't like. No, it's not.
She likes looking at the puzzle. She doesn't like working at it.
Yeah, well, no, that's me. Manpans loves working on the puzzle.
No, I don't like having to think of a plan to like try and draw people in.
Because I'm not good at it. I'm just not good at it.
Well, I think it depends on what you're marketing, though, right? It's different if it's your own personal stuff. If you say, hey, everybody come see my web series, that's completely different marketing than if you work for a large business. Hey, guys, you can buy my stuff, you know.
Yeah, but still, that's pretty much what it is for me. Like, people are like, how do we market this? I'm like, I don't know. Put it on Facebook?
Throw
alcohol at it.
Actually, a lot of people drink so much. Alcohol is a big draw. I recently went to sort of something like an unconference, and they said that the way that they started was by giving away free alcohol, and they went from 3 people attending to over 300 now.
I would be among them.
Like Puzzle Pint. I'm surprised you don't go to more of those.
That's not free alcohol.
No, it isn't, but there's still alcohol there.
But it's also loud. It's super loud.
So, Melissa, do you have any alcohol-driven pop-ups planned?
Manda will be there. So if you have your Pioneer Village with alcohol, she will be crawling your streets.
Historically accurate alcohol.
We actually have a pop-up coming up in a pub on Thursday, so there's that.
Oh, this is cool.
Yeah, she's there.
I'll book time off work. I'll rent a car.
We could GoPro it. Manda can get drunk as the night goes on.
GoPro. That's a bad idea. Poor Melissa.
She's like,
So you came to Toronto, or probably the greater Toronto area, to do a number of games. Did any stick out? Or did any of them spur you on? Or which ones did you enjoy? I know it's really hard when we ask people what their favorite room is. So I'm not going to ask you your favorite rooms, but just things that stuck out. And
trends that you would want to follow.
Or like inspirational pieces.
Of course. So I think one of the first games I actually played in Toronto was Looking Glass. And I loved it. It was awesome. Christine's awesome.
I was going. Mm-hmm. Yes, I was actually recommending them to another family just this morning. So, yeah, they did their son did their very first escape room. Oh, he was super excited. I kind of complained about the last puzzle because it was time travel lab. But other than that, he really enjoyed it. And then they're wanting to do it as a family. And says, "Oh, you and they live near." Looking Glass. I'm saying you guys have to go and do this one
for sure.
Yeah, Looking Glass is awesome. I recently played Crypto, as in a few months ago, and I loved their set design. I just loved it. I felt like it was a fully immersive experience walking into it compared to some other games in Toronto. So I think Crypto's games has a set to aspire to kind of want to be up to their caliber of design. It's interesting, Toronto's range of escape rooms, I find. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, I would say Looking Glass was really great. Crypto was awesome.
Which Crypto did you do? There's Infiltration and there's the Experiment.
We played 2 of their games. So it was the first 2 that they created. I don't remember the names.
It was those 2, yeah. I think their newest one wasn't out at the time because it just... released last month, right?
Okay, yeah.
Or 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, that
it was funny because I did an escape room and it was not in Toronto, it was outside of Toronto. And we were a little bit early, as I am wont to do, and I was talking to the owner and they were saying one of the rooms that he did was Crypto and he was inspired by it, so he wanted to open up his own. Now, I didn't immediately get excited because I was in their lobby and it didn't look like they put a lot of effort into the lobby. So I was thinking, but he said he tried Crypto and enjoyed it. So I thought, oh, hey, if he gets his inspiration from Crypto, maybe his rooms will be good. And it was horrible.
Oh, no.
It was an office with things hanging on it and they were horrible puzzles and nothing about it was fun, actually.
Whoa.
Yeah, I know. And and I'm not gonna out them, but it wasn't a fun experience. So I was just hoping, you know, that maybe the room will be good. I'm not even talking about aesthetics. It was just a horrible experience. Yeah.
I always think it's a red flag for me, though, whenever I hear anyone that says anything along the same lines as that, though. If they're like, oh, I played a game at that, like, a certain facility that has really good games, and I decided to open up my own. I don't know why. Every owner that I've talked to that has said that, I've unfortunately never liked their games.
It's one of those, like, we should start a band kind of statements.
Yep.
Yep.
So have you been to a number of our immersive escape rooms that are here? Or because you, I know you've done a few of them, some of them good, some of them not so good. But there aren't that many that are immersive here. So I just want to know if you've tried any of them.
I not really. I find that we play most of our games when we're traveling out for work, which isn't usually Toronto. It's usually actually probably Ottawa or into the States. And those experiences are quite different. We've played some games at Escape Games Canada, and they have pretty immersive games there as well, which is great. But I don't think I've played any other really immersive games. I've heard good things about Maze, and I want to go there. But other than that, not really.
Have you tried the Castle Loma ones? I know you were talking about doing a tower.
Yes, I actually just played it yesterday.
Oh, well, there, just yesterday. Oh, what did you think?
Yesterday. I liked it. We have had a lot of customers that have played that game before coming to us, oddly enough. And we always heard mixed things about it. So when we were even driving up to Castle Loma yesterday, we were like, okay, we need to go into this with an empty or open mind, not an empty mind. That'd be bad. to be able to kind of just appreciate the experience overall. So it was two of us paired up with two other people. And a group of seven that was supposed to be with us did not show. And I'm very happy that a group of seven did not show.
Wow. So it was just the four of you?
Yeah. And we escaped. We did it. And it was awesome. But I liked the experience. It was a lot different than what we've experienced, especially in Toronto. But I do think with more people, I don't think I would have liked it.
I do like Castle Loma. Because they, in fact, I do like Secret City Adventures because they always try different things. And I appreciate that about them a lot because they'll try new and different things. They will do Castle Loma. They will do the Lost in Chinatown. They have done different things to, and they'll bring in actors. So we don't actually have very many actors with any of our other escape rooms here.
Yeah, that's makes me sad.
That's really only a Secret City Adventures thing. And it's not, I mean, some people may have one in there, but they try to go, they have many for that matter.
Yeah, it was awesome. Their actors did such a good job of facilitating the four of us. And what I liked about that game a lot was that when you got a hint or a nudge, it didn't feel like you were getting a piece of information because you weren't on the right path, but the facilitators just kind of nudged you in the right direction as opposed to being like, well, here is a hint because you're going the wrong way or anything like that. So I appreciated that.
Mm-hmm. I think I do remember reading in Puzzlecraft. I don't know if you've read that book. They have an interesting section, just a small section, just on frustration and how players like to be frustrated if they have the power to take themselves out of frustration. And so giving them a hint, it's not telling them the answer outright, but just telling them that they're on the right track.
I think they did a really good job with that.
Going back to your pop-ups, actually, so, and going off of the Castle Loma thing, when you're researching, like, the history of Kingston and the history of these areas, what are some of the more fun things you've discovered? Like, have you started on with one particular goal? Like, we want to tell about this period in history, and then you find a little factoid that you're like, oh, we should totally center the escape room around this.
Yeah, so we have a lovely fellow named Mark. Mark is our historics project manager. He has a master's in history from Queens. Ooh. And so he does all of our research and development for all of our historic games. So basically, yeah, it's amazing.
We need one of those.
It's awesome. He'll go off and he'll write these little hilarious reports and give them off to the game developers about what they can use in their games. That would make it historically accurate.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's awesome. And Kingston has the most ridiculous history that a lot of people don't really know about, which is what we're trying to show people. Like, we have a horror game in our basement of our brick and mortar location, and it's called Coroner's Report. And it's loosely based off of how Queen's medical students a long time ago, they didn't have bodies that they could study. So they started robbing graves.
Oh, I've heard about this. Yeah, I've listened to a couple podcasts on it.
Yeah. And so there's so many funny stories about how when civilians would find these dead bodies in places, what they would do to kind of mess around back to the Queen students, I suppose. So they would act like they were dead, and then the Queen's medical students would think that they were their dead corpse that they had stolen, but actually it was someone that was alive that was just trying to mess with them. Yeah. So our game Coroner's Report is loosely based off of that, and it's about how doctors have ran out of subjects to study, so they've decided to kidnap Kingstonians, I suppose, to study.
I do find that some escape facilities don't realize that, you know, there usually is an interesting history there that they can take advantage of to make their rooms a little more unique, as opposed to going to the old standbys of things like zombies and serial killers. Do you find that as well?
Yeah, I've realized that a lot more, especially lately when we've been doing more development for some of our games. There's so many awesome, awesome stories, and then it makes it different. You're not playing a stereotypical murder mystery game, or if you are, maybe it's actually based on a murder mystery from your town. We have a game that's called The Great Maple Syrup Heist, and it's at Bellevue House, and it's hilarious, and the actors there that facilitate the game are awesome, but it's loosely based off of basically the lifestyle when Sir John A. Macdonald lived at Bellevue House, but also a joke around the maple syrup that's been stolen in Quebec somehow all the time. There's also really great stories that have happened in Canada that would provide a really good setting for escape rooms.
So we're just about to wrap up. I don't know if you'd like to give some advice and wisdom about if other people are interested in running their own pop-up.
Good question or comment.
Or maybe you don't want the competition. No. So if you're not in Kingston, don't run pop-ups. But if you are in Kingston, but if you're not in Kingston, then go to town, and Melissa is here for you.
Heck yes, always. It's awesome. Pop-up games are the way to go. You get to meet a lot of really cool people. You get to be in a really cool space. You typically partner up with some awesome people too, whether it's a government site or maybe a private institution, and it just helps drive your business.
But you'll need 16 people in your company.
Yes, you would need a big team to be able to pull it off.
Okay, anyway, thank you so much, Melissa, for joining us today and talking about your company, talking about the Unconference. For anyone else that is listening, once again, they run Improbable Escapes out of Kingston. And I think Melissa can tell us the web address. I don't know what the URL is offhand.
It's www.improbableescapes.com.
Cool. Thank you. Yeah, I could have just guessed that, but I didn't want to go crazy. Okay, Man Pans. It's time for you to talk us out.
All right, and then Melissa can get out of her closet.
Literally.
How long is she going to be in there?
She's just talking to herself in a closet.
Yeah, that's me.
Room Escape Divas is brought to you by Inverse Genius. You can go to InverseGenius.com to find other fun podcasts just like this one. You can also email us at RoomEscapeDivas@gmail.com, or you can find us on or you can find us on Facebook. Just look for Room Escape Divas and click the like button. And you can find us on Twitter. Thanks, Ruby, for sticking up for me. Oh, no, you can't find us on Twitter, but you can use the hashtag REDivas.
All of us are on Twitter, actually.
Yes, just Ruby personally we're on Twitter. And that takes too long to say our name. So, thanks, guys.
Bye-bye.